Good to see you. If we haven't had a chance to meet yet, my name's Marty. I'm one of the pastors here at BCC. And if you're new or just joining us, welcome. We are so glad that you're here. You picked a great week to come because today we're going to be finishing up our If Only series. And when we talk about this idea of if only, whenever we find ourselves unhappy or there's something in our life that we want to change, we typically say things like, well, if only I had more, my life would be better, or my life would be different, or if only I knew more, or if I achieved more, or if I experienced more. In other words, the reason we feel we're not happy now is because we don't know enough, or have enough, or have experienced enough, or achieved enough with our life. And so whenever we say, if only, whatever the thing is that we want more of, that's ultimately where we're placing our faith. We're trusting that having more will give us a better life, and we're putting our faith in that. And this If Only series, we're running this idea up against an Old Testament teaching in the book of Ecclesiastes. And Ecclesiastes was written by an ancient king named Solomon. And what Solomon did is he looked out at the world around him, and he sought out to observe all that he could observe and experience everything that there was to experience and achieve all that he, as king, could achieve to see if it would give him his best life, to see where it would lead him. And what we've seen in this series through the book of Solomon is that if we know everything that there is to know, but we don't know God, then our knowledge just leads us to grief and sorrow, because we become aware of all the crooked things in life that we could never make straight. Or if we have everything that there is to have, but we don't know God, we don't actually end up enjoying our possessions, but we actually get overcome with greed instead of living generously. And today we're gonna unpack this idea that if we only experienced more, our life would be better. And to do that, we're gonna be in Ecclesiastes chapter 2. If you have a Bible, I encourage you to turn there. But while you're turning there, how many of you have ever been so tired and frustrated with your life that you decided, you know what, I need a vacation? Anybody? I need a vacation. And so you took your family on vacation, right? Maybe you took your family on a vacation to Disneyland, per se. Now, the great thing about experiencing something like a family vacation to Disneyland is that when you're on a vacation like that, all of a sudden, everything in your life that used to be really difficult becomes much easier. So when it comes time to wake up, the kids are sleeping in. They don't have school. Mom and dad don't have to go to work. Nobody has to make breakfast. In fact, when you wake up, you can just walk down into the hotel lobby where you're staying, and they've got breakfast covered for you. It's all made. There's a juice bar, and there's a cereal bar where your kids can have endless Lucky Charms and Fruit Loops and Fruity Pebbles. And then when they've had their fill of cereal, they can move on to the pancake machine. That's right, the pancake machine. If you've never seen this, this will absolutely change your life. This machine, found in hotel lobbies for breakfast all over the world, you push this button, and it dispenses some pancake mixture onto a conveyor belt, and then you can actually track the progress of your pancake until a pancake pops out on the other side and you get to enjoy a hot pancake. And guess what? If you loved that and you want another one, you just push the button again. It's like a photocopier for pancakes. It's amazing. And when you've had your fill of pancakes, you're ready to start the day, don't worry about entertaining the kids. You just walk into the Disneyland park. And there at the park, there's Mickey and Goofy and Buzz Lightyear and all the Star Wars gang. They're all there to entertain your kids. And you can enjoy rides and take in all the sights and all the smells. It's such a wonderful, exhilarating experience for the whole family. And then after a big day when you're tired and you're exhausted, the last thing you're thinking about is, oh, now I have to go cook a meal, because you can just go back to the hotel and order room service. They'll bring dinner right to your hotel room, and you can just sit there and enjoy it from the comfort of your bed while you watch TV and stay up late with your family. This is vacation. And it's great and it's wonderful and it's everything you ever wanted it to be. But then there comes the day and the time when you have to go home. And when you get home, home's not like vacation. There's things that you have to do at home now that you weren't worrying about when you were on vacation. Now the kids, they're not sleeping in. They're up early. And guess what? They're hungry. They want breakfast. And there's no juice bar. There's no pancake machine where you can push a button. So they start pushing your buttons. And now you're stuck flipping pancakes and making them for the kids. And you're making so many and they're eating so many. You don't have time to eat one. So you're stuck microwaving a cold pancakes 30 minutes later when the kids are out the door. And then it's off to work. And when you get home, your kids are home too. And now there's no Goofy, there's no Mickey, there's no Buzz Lightyear, there's no rides. Your kids just have a bedroom to entertain them and a brother. And so they're starting to think, you entertain me. And the laundry's piled up and the dishes are piling up and you're still unpacking the bags trying to catch up on life. And you start to think, man, I need a vacation. And you only just got back. Have you ever wondered why it's so hard to come back from a vacation like this? It's great and it's amazing, but when you get back and you have to switch gears back to reality, it can be so jarring. And that's because we know that the way we treat ourselves on vacation isn't sustainable long-term. That's why it's a vacation. On vacation, we pursue pleasurable experiences that we know we're only gonna pursue for a short amount of time. You do things on vacation that you would never do every day in your day-to-day normal life, but you indulge yourself because, well, we're on vacation. This is what we've been saving for. This is what we've been looking forward to. Let's go all out and experience all there is to experience. But what would happen if you tried to live like you did on vacation, not just for a weekend, not just for a few weeks, but for your entire life? What would happen if you spent all your time, effort, energy, finances, focus to pursue pleasure and pleasurable experiences, and you followed that road, pursuing pleasure as far as the road would take you, and then you arrived at your pleasurable destination, and you took all the time in the world to enjoy every pleasurable experience this world had to offer you? And that's exactly what Solomon did in the book of Ecclesiastes. See, Solomon as king, he had access to everything. Nothing was off limits. And he purposed in his heart to test himself with pleasure to see what would happen if he pursued it with everything that he had. No one was smarter or more wealthy or went all out as much as Solomon did. And he came to a conclusion and wrote it down in the book of Ecclesiastes chapter 2. And let's read it together. This is Solomon's great experiment of experience. And in chapter 2, verse 1, he says this. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what's good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. See, what Solomon found out is that pleasure is a gift to enjoy, but not a goal to pursue. See, when we live to please ourselves, it only produces an emptiness and loss of meaning because that pleasure seeking isn't sustainable. But when we live lives that please God, it brings pleasure and an enjoyment of experience with Him. Because pleasure, it's a gift to enjoy, not a goal to pursue. And so Solomon here, he records his journey and he says, hey, I'm gonna test myself. I'm gonna experiment with every form of pleasure available to me. Pleasure test. How many of you are thinking, where was this test when I was in school? Pleasure test, that sounds amazing. Yeah, I'm gonna go for it. I'm gonna go all the way and enjoy all that there is to get. David Geffen once said, if you want it, you can get it, and I want it all. So what would happen if you wanted it? And then you got it, and then you had it all. Solomon pursued this, and the great thing about him is that as king, he had unlimited access to everything. Nothing was off limits. In fact, just to give you an idea of Solomon's wealth that he had at his disposal to pursue this pleasure test, I came up with a list of the most successful and wealthy people in the world today and compared them to Solomon. So just to give you an idea, the first is Oprah Winfrey. Oprah, she has $3 billion to her name. Now, I think it used to be significantly more in 2004 before she decided that everyone was going to get a car, but now she has $3 billion, which is a lot of money. And then after her, there's Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla. He has $22.8 billion. Incredible. After him, there's Mark Zuckerberg, who launched Facebook, $52.3 billion. And then, of course, Bill Gates, the co-founder and former CEO of Microsoft, $89.5 billion. And the wealthiest man in modern history, Jeff Bezos of Amazon, $125 billion. These are the wealthiest people today. Now, how do they compare to Solomon? Well, Solomon had a net worth of $2.1 trillion. $2.1 trillion. In fact, in 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 27, it tells us that in Solomon's time, silver was as worthless as rocks. You see a rock and you see some silver, they're worth the same because every year 25 tons of gold was given to Solomon. Not to mention all of his wealth of all of his armies and all of his achievements and accomplishes $2.1 trillion. Now, what do you do with all that money? What in the world do you pursue when you have that much money? Well, if you're Solomon, in this case, he had some fun. He had some fun. He sought after every pleasurable experience. What can my money buy? What will it achieve me? Come now, I will test myself with pleasure and see what the world has to offer me. Nothing's off limits. And the first thing he tries as he's testing himself with pleasure is laughter. Everybody say laughter. Laughter. He says, I tried laughter. Solomon tries to get a laugh out of life. He takes the Monty Python approach, right? Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. So when you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this will help things turn out for the best and always look on the bright side of life. Hey, you know all those unpleasant aspects of life, the difficult things of life that none of us enjoy? Let's just use our money to avoid all of that. Only do what sparks joy for you, he might say. And just pursue laughter. Laugh at life. And this word laughter, it can mean two things. It can mean pursuing the fun of a game, innocent enjoyment, innocent fun, whatever's gonna make you laugh. And it can also mean laughter at the expense of somebody else. A rude laughter that would see someone else's pain and discomfort and mock them for it. And so Solomon, he's gonna see what happens if I just try to have a laugh. So what do you enjoy doing? Maybe for you, it's the fun of a football game, or it's the fun of travel, or experiencing music and culture. But whatever you find fun, what would happen if you decided, I'm gonna live for that? And Solomon's conclusion right away is that it's vanity. He actually uses the word madness. It's madness because he found laughter couldn't answer all the difficult questions in life. You can laugh it off and try to avoid it, but the issues of life are bigger than laughter is able to handle. And he doesn't say that the innocent fun experiences he pursued weren't fun. He just says that they weren't enough. And he's not so concerned with what's right or wrong in this journey as much as he's concerned as, is it enough? Will it satisfy? Will it make me happy? Will it ultimately give me meaning? Can it answer the meaning and purpose under the sun? Can it answer the hardest questions in my life? And his answer is the same. It's vanity. It's not enough. It can't save you. It's madness. And so Solomon switches gears from innocent fun. And he says, after much thought, I decided to cheer my heart with wine, and I embraced folly. My mind still guided me with wisdom. So Solomon switches gears here from innocent fun and laughter to partying off the rails, completely out of control. The word for folly means a loss of judgment, off the rails, uncontrolled, foolish fun. This is like when you binge watch an entire series of Netflix in one weekend. And you know that you should go to bed. Maybe you have work in the morning and you're ready to go to sleep for the night and turn it off. But Netflix, after the episode, just starts auto-counting down from 5 seconds. And you think, well, might as well watch the next one and go get some snacks and keep watching until you've watched the entire season. Madness, off the rails, out of control, pleasure-seeking fun. This is me. I have a hard time doing things in moderation. Anybody with me? If I'm eating tortilla chips, I can't just have one chip. I'm gonna eat the entire bag, and I'm gonna have a bucket of habanero salsa with it. And this is Solomon, nothing in moderation here. He's gonna go all in to this party scene. He is gonna cheer himself with wine. He's gonna throw parties. He's gonna completely embrace this rock star lifestyle. But then he says something different. He says, I embraced folly, but my heart guided me with wisdom. So in Solomon's case, he partied like a rock star, but as he did, he was as wise as a billionaire businessman. I call this life on both sides of the rumble strip. You know when you're driving your car and you start to drift out of your lane towards either of the shoulders, and the minute that the tread of your tire hits a rumble strip, you hear this really loud noise, your car starts to rumble, and it's a sound that you can both feel and hear, and it serves as a warning to you that you are about to go off the rails. And Solomon here, he seems to have gone off the rails on purpose, even though he had the wisdom to know better, even though he had the wisdom to know it wouldn't give him life, it wouldn't make him happy, he went anyway. And then, once he was out of control, he allowed wisdom to guide his heart back onto the main road. He tried life on both sides of the rumble strip. And I think this is really important because when it comes to seeking pleasure, many of us would say, well, the reason Solomon wasn't happy or the reason you're not happy or the reason I'm not happy is because we pursue pleasure, but we don't do it in moderation. You can't go all the way there, Solomon. If you go all the way down into addictions and substance abuse, well then, yeah, of course you're not gonna be happy. You just needed a more proportioned, controlled, highbrow approach to pleasure. And then you'd be happy. And Solomon said, well listen, I tried the kegger and we played beer pong. And then I also drank wine at the country club over a round of golf with the boys. And both sides of that, lowbrow and highbrow, they both led me to the same conclusion. It's vanity. It doesn't give my life meaning. It doesn't only ultimately make me happy. It's not sustainable. It doesn't lead me to my best life. He tried moderation and out of control. See, Proverbs 25:16 says that if you find honey, eat just enough of it. Too much and you will vomit. And so the thought is, well, maybe Solomon just ate too much honey. Solomon, you went too far. And he says, well, yeah, I tried eating too much, but then wisdom guided me back so that I avoided getting sick. I've tried both, parting with a complete disregard for the rumble strip and then a more wise, controlled, proportioned pleasure seeking on the main road. And if you're wondering, did Solomon really try all there is to try in the world when he came to this conclusion that living for pleasure is vanity, that pleasure needs to be a gift and not a goal to pursue? That when we live to please ourselves, it only produces an emptiness and loss of meaning. Did he really mean that? Did he really explore this as much as he should have to come to such a harsh conclusion? Well, in verse 10 of chapter 2, he makes it clear. He says, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. If my eyes saw it and I wanted it, I got it and I tried it. If my heart wanted it, I followed my heart, and it didn't lead me to life. If we were to read all of chapter 2, which we've done earlier in the series, we would see that Solomon, he had his own private vineyards. He had private gardens. He had pools, parks, musicians in his home, beautiful homes, summer homes, vacation homes. Concerning pleasure, he had 700 wives and 300 concubines, to which I think that doesn't sound great. 700 wives and 300 concubines. He did not deny his heart a single pleasure. And yet, we're told he came to hate his own life. What? He came to hate all the work of his hands under the sun and the results that they brought. And so here's what we learn from Solomon's pleasure test. Attempting to please ourselves through great experiences produces an emptiness and loss of meaning. In other words, if we push God out of the picture and we say, I'm gonna pursue pleasure in and of itself without God, we put way too much pressure on pleasure to give our life meaning. He says it'll be like vanity. It'll be grasping for the wind. You'll reach out and you'll think that you have life and it'll just slip through your fingers. None of it can save you. None of it lasts beyond the grave. And that's because we know this to be true in life in general. There is a limit to how much pleasure we can actually experience. When we make pleasure our goal, we actually limit ourselves in the pleasure we experience because of a little law called the law of diminishing returns. Now, to illustrate the law of diminishing returns, I could talk about something heavy like substances or, you know, alcohol, and I want to talk about donuts. Now, in middle school ministry, of which I lead middle school students every Sunday, I serve donuts to our middle schoolers every week, so I consider myself an expert in donuts. We are the one place on campus where you can count on getting donuts every week, which I'm very proud of. But I have here my donut chart. See Exhibit A on this graph to illustrate diminishing returns. So when you smell a donut, and it brings such joy and such delight, even just the smell when you walk into a bakery, and you think, oh man, I want a donut. This is a great idea. I have made a great choice today in pursuing breakfast and having a donut. And so you have that donut and it tastes great and it feels great. And in fact, it's such an enjoyable experience, that first donut, that you think to yourself, I think I want another one. And then so if you choose to have that second donut, now you're starting to think, okay, not the greatest idea. You start to feel a little heavy, right? Your mouth gets sore. Your teeth start to hurt. You get a little tired, a little fatigued. And then if you go for that third donut, you start to think, what in the world have I done? You start questioning your life choices. And now you're thinking, okay, I need a nap. Where's the nearest bed? How in the world am I going to accomplish everything that I need to get done for the rest of the day? And the more donuts you pursue, the less enjoyment you feel, to the point where you get to that 10th donut and the emoji at the bottom says it all. Our pleasure, there's a diminishing return. It's not sustainable. When we pursue breakfast and donuts are a part of breakfast, it works. You can do that. You can pursue breakfast and have a donut be a part of your breakfast and that works. But if you pursue donuts, that doesn't work. And it's the same way with the pleasures in life. When we make pleasure itself the goal, we're actually limiting ourselves in the pleasure of our experiences that we are going to enjoy because of this law of diminishing returns. And so now we've seen why pursuing pleasure isn't sustainable for Solomon. It's because you can't live that way forever. It's the same reason why you can go and enjoy a great vacation, but you can't live there. Eventually, you have to come back and adjust back to life. These are the things that we try to enjoy without God that don't bring us meaning. So if you pursue pleasure with your whole heart without God, the pleasure will ultimately diminish because that thing, whatever it is that you and I pursue, it has a limited supply. But if you pursue God with your whole heart, he will always satisfy because God, he's not limited in supply. He is irreducible. He can't be reduced. And so anytime we pursue him, we ultimately find the pleasure and the enjoyment that we wanted when we tried to do it without God. And we know this to be true. Doing things for ourselves actually keeps us from enjoying things. This is like when a teacher gives a homework assignment. And kids come home for the weekend and they've been assigned homework over their weekend, and instead of doing it, you know, on the bus on the way home or right when they get home on Friday, they go play, go enjoy friends. They're playing games and watching TV, and then Saturday rolls around and they're still playing and they're still hanging out. And then Sunday comes around and they still haven't done their homework. And all the while they're trying to have fun, they're not actually enjoying having fun because there's this feeling of, I'm not doing something that I know I need to be doing. I should have done my homework, and because I haven't, I can't actually enjoy what's right in front of me because I know homework's coming. And it's the same way with us. When we try to do life without God, there's always something in our life that we just know is missing. God's put eternity on our heart. He's wired us to pursue and to seek him. And when we don't live to please God and we try to find enjoyment in it of ourselves, there's always this feeling like something's missing, it's not enough. And so how do we experience pleasure? If we can't experience pleasure by doing it on our own without God, how do we actually experience pleasure? Well, Solomon's conclusion is that God gives pleasure and enjoyment in our experiences when we live lives that please him. God gives it to you. Pleasure is a gift to enjoy, not a goal to pursue. We read in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 24, Solomon says, "A person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too I see is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? But to the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom and knowledge and happiness. But to the sinner, he just gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind." See, God gives us all of these things in life to enjoy, but you won't enjoy it if you're not living a life that pleases him. He says, "For without him, who can find enjoyment? Without God, who can actually experience pleasure? Doing things without God, we can't, because of diminishing returns, because it's not sustainable, because of emptiness and loss of meaning. But pleasing God will bring enjoyment when we live our life with him. To the person who pleases God, he gives pleasure and enjoyment. Otherwise, we end up like Solomon. We know it all, but we only experience grief and sorrow. We have it all, but it doesn't mean anything to us. We achieve it all, but we're not sure what's gonna happen to everything we've worked so hard for once we're done, and if it'll only be forgotten in the end. And we can experience everything there is to experience in life, but only end up feeling numb. So then the question is, if pleasing God brings pleasure, how do I please God? What does it look like to actually please God? Because that's when we're gonna line up with our greatest pleasure. And to find the answer to that, we're gonna turn to the last chapter of Ecclesiastes. We're gonna move out of Ecclesiastes chapter 2 to the very end of his book and chapter 12. And Solomon, he's gonna give his final verdict on this whole if only series. He's gonna give us the conclusion to the whole matter, to all of his pursuits, as he's pursued wisdom and knowledge, as he's pursued experience, as he's pursued achievement, as he's experienced having it all. This is his conclusion to the whole matter. And in chapter 12, verse 13, he says this: "Now all has been heard. Here's the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil." So here it is. Here's how you and I please God. We fear him and we obey him. We fear God and we keep his commandments. To fear God means we recognize his authority in our life, the wisdom that he has, that he ultimately knows what's best for our life. He has plans and purposes that he's prepared for you and I to walk in. He is our best life, and we recognize his authority, and then we listen to him and we obey him. We actually do what he says. Again, it's kind of like when mom and dad tell kids to clean their room by Sunday. Clean your room by Sunday. And all the while the kids are just playing, and Sunday rolls around and you say, "Hey, did you clean your room?" "Nope, not yet." And they're not having fun. They're not enjoying their life because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and they're instead trying to pursue enjoyment for themselves. And Solomon says, listen, it's not about that. It's about fearing God. Have respect for them. Recognize their authority over your life. When a child doesn't recognize the authority of their parents over their life, they don't experience joy doing things their own way in open rebellion to what their parents want. It's not enjoyable, not in the long term. And so Solomon says, hey, fear him, obey him, and you will experience pleasure. You want pleasure? Don't pursue pleasure. Pursue Jesus. He is your greatest pleasure. This is our mission and the vision of this church, is that we would be inspired to know, love, and follow Jesus, because he is our greatest joy. He is our greatest pleasure. In Psalm chapter 16, verse 11, he says, "You make known to me the path of life. In your presence, there is fullness of joy, and at your right hand are pleasures forevermore." In Psalm 145, 16, he says, "God opens his hand and satisfies the desire of every living thing." God has designed and wired you and I for pleasure, and he himself is our greatest pleasure. When we pursue him and what he wants, we get enjoyment and life and the pleasure of experience with him. See, I noticed in my life, sometimes I think things that aren't true. There's a lot of things in my life that I've thought over the years that haven't been true. Like when I was little and I heard about this idea of potty train, I thought that there was an actual train that you could ride to the potty, and I got really excited. I was like, that sounds awesome. I thought that all dogs were boys and all cats were girls. I thought that there was a letter in the alphabet, L-M-N-O. Not L-M-N-O, but L-M-N-O was just a letter in the alphabet. And then as I got older, I realized, you know what, none of these things that I've held at the core of my being as these beliefs are actually true. There are dogs that are male and female. There are cats that are male and female. What is happening? I have thought things my whole life that aren't true. And sometimes when it comes to my relationship with God, I can think things about him that aren't actually true. Sometimes I feel like God is this police officer just waiting for me to do something wrong so he can give me a ticket. Or I think God is this cosmic killjoy, this disagreeable dictator in the sky with a whole bunch of lists of do's and don'ts and stay away from this because this is fun, all the while trying to tell me what's fun. And the things that I'm hearing, I'm like, that doesn't sound fun. And God's ultimately out to kill my joy instead of give me joy. And then I hear teachers say, hey, stay away from that. That's sin. That's not fun. And I think, that is fun. You're lying to me. I know that's fun. So I don't want anything to do with what you're saying. And I had a good season in my life, a good long season where I actually avoided God, and it was disastrous for my life because I had the wrong idea of who he was. I thought he was this cosmic killjoy. But listen, God isn't a cosmic killjoy. He is the creator of joy. And he wants you and I to experience the joy of a life lived with him. But if we push God out of our life, you're putting too much pressure on pleasure to give you life, and it can never do that. That's why we seek Jesus. So ask yourself these questions this morning. In your life, have you recognized Jesus' authority? Have you recognized Jesus' authority over your life? He has your best life. You are God's workmanship created in Christ Jesus. He has amazing plans and purposes for you that he wants you to walk in. Jesus said, I came to give you life and that you would have life more abundantly. You would have life to the full. In Jesus is life. He's the way, the truth, and the life. And everything that we need and ultimately want in life can be found in relationship with him. But we need to recognize his authority. How have we recognized the authority of Jesus in our life? And how are we going to follow him and do what he says? How are we going to pursue God in this season? There's some great opportunities here at BCC for you to pursue God and grow in your relationship with him and experience all the joy that he has for your life. One of the best ways we do this is in community. When we get out of rows and into circles and we connect to one another in meaningful relationship, that's when life change happens. It's why we do Rooted. It's why we have men's and women's community. It's why we do small groups in middle school and small groups in high school on Wednesday nights, because we believe that life that we all want is experienced in community with other people in relationship. And maybe for you, this is a season where you step in and you connect to other people to grow in your relationship with God and find your joy in him. So how will you fear God in this season, and how will you keep his commandments? Because this is our all. This is why we were created. This is what God's plans and purposes are for our life. And this is how we move from the if only life of if only I had more, if only I experienced more, if only I achieved more, if only I knew more, to saying, well, if only I had more of God. And then we take a next step towards him. Let's pray. God, we're so thankful for your grace. We're thankful for your love. We thank you that you are our all. God, we want to pursue you this morning together. And regardless of how our week's been or what we've been chasing after up until this point, Lord, in this series, we've seen that you are all we need. You are more than enough. You can satisfy the desire of every heart in this room. And God, we want to trust you together for that. We want to trust you enough to fear you, to recognize your authority in our life, and to do what you say. Jesus, you said if we love you, we would keep your commandments. And we thank you that you first loved us. And out of the overflow of your love that you've poured out for us, we can now love you with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength and experience the best life that you have for us. So God, would you, Holy Spirit, would you move in every heart in this room and draw us to yourself and show us each what our next step is in pursuing you, our greatest pleasure. We love you. We trust you. We ask these things in Jesus' name. And everybody said, amen. Amen.